Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. I'm really happy today because I have two incredible guests, Hudson League and Stephen L. Sears. Hudson is a wonderful actress. She is a yoga master. She's a spiritual advisor, really a great lady. And Stephen is a producer and a writer and first-time novelist. Welcome, Steve and Hudson.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Are you guys looking forward to the Xena convention?
Sure.
That's it?
I wanted to see how long
okay.
that silence was going to go on. Well, I always look forward to it. I have fun because I it's a big family reunion, and it's been like that for how many years? 12, 13 years, something like that. So it's really gone beyond the boundaries of Xena. Quite honestly, if it was just about a TV show, I probably would kind of go, well, if you pay me enough money, I'll show up. But no, I enjoy it. I enjoy it. Half the people there are like, you know, friends across the country and around the world. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Hudson?
I didn't know it's been going on for 13 years. That is amazing.
Yeah.
I always love doing the conventions. They are, you know, it's not about the TV show for me either. And one of the things that I love bringing is other modalities, like because creation is generous and lets me do other things, I like bringing what I teach to the creation conventions as well. And that
I love your yoga class. That's so great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I feel like I'm sharing something more than like a character that I did over and over again. You know, I mean, there's only so many times I can get on stage. And as I get older, I feel so much less like Kalisto. which
That's
is great.
A good thing, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing, too. A lot of therapy. But I feel, I feel excited about this one. And I loved the one we had in France this year, too. It attracts an incredibly kind group of people. Wouldn't you agree, Steve?
Yes, absolutely. I was just talking to somebody recently. We were talking about an organization, which I'm going to meet the guy who runs the organization tomorrow night, actually, which is an organization that does a lot of entertainment online, but they're basically a charitable organization. They just give a lot of money. People don't know this. They just give a lot of money out there. And we were talking about the Xena fans and the fact that they try to become not just in touch with themselves, but by using that understanding of themselves, they can be more empathic toward other people who are, you know, not doing as well. And this is the charity that comes out of that. I think it's where it always begins. And that's one thing that, Hudson, you mentioned that you're given the latitude to do different things at these particular conventions. And that is one of the kind of cool things about these conventions, is that you can have those things that are not about specifically Xena. They're really about this weird, strange, and yet very necessary bonding that people are able to make with each other and with themselves. And I always kind of like look forward to seeing the list of those self-awareness type of things that you do.
Mm. Yeah, it's super cool that we get to do things like that and that are outside the norm. And, like, well, I mean, where else do you get to sing, Mr. Sears? Like, you know? Like, really? Or bring your dog? Or I mean, it really is, like, it is fun.
Oh, I finally get to meet Julian. I'm so excited.
Julian, yeah. He just got notified. He's invited, so he'll be there.
Yay.
Maybe he'll sing this time.
Oh, that's
Yeah, that was a very bizarre thing, is the whole singing thing. And just, well, because you're right. At a certain point, how many times can we answer questions that have not been put on the Internet millions of times? I mean, it's always good to get those questions, and I always want to kind of keep it in that, you know, particular, you're here because of Xena, so let's, you know, address those kinds of things. But, you know, if it was just about a TV show, it would be kind of antiseptic, you know?
Yeah.
Well, according to one of the, I think it's Mary D. or Wish, I don't remember which one, you guys, between all the stars and all the charities, it's over $3.5 million in the last 15 years have been given to charity.
Wow.
Oh, that's so beautiful. beautiful.
That's great.
Isn't it?
It is, yeah,
but that's
absolutely
the heart of the people that are attracted to it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the people that are attracted to watching that. Like, it's really freaking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I still have people
is.
Who ask me about it. I mean, I still have people who ask me about what is the magic of the show? Why is it still going on with this kind of fan strength at this time, so many years after we went off the air? And just somehow these connections were touched. It's blown me away. It really has.
Do you remember when the writer's strike was going on and all of us helped you guys? I don't know if you remember that, the writer's strike.
Oh, no.
You don't remember that?
Well,
yeah,
of course
we,
I remember
we,
that.
We got stuff together.
Oh, I know. It was. I remember the. It was supposed to be the. We were supposed to pick at NBC, and everybody was being, you know, even the studios were being kind of great with all of this, allowing us to do whatever. But this had been kind of set up in advance. I think Liz and I had chatted about it, and the night before it was supposed to happen, we had a storm come in, if people remember that. The temperatures dropped. It was raining. It was freezing. And I put out this thing on the internet saying, "Look, folks, don't catch a cold for this. Do not get the flu. You know, this is if it warms up, great, but don't do anything stupid. You know, we'll be fine out there." So when I showed up, I parked over by Johnny Carson Park, and I'm walking up, and I see some people walking down, and I think, "Oh, okay, there's a couple of people heading back to their cars." And in fact, that was actually the end of the strike line, because it was so packed that it increased fourfold over what it was normally. So many of the fans showed up for that. And we had a blast. It was fun.
Yep. I mean, that's sort of the core of what it's about.
Yeah. And also the friendships that have been made within the show. I mean, it's funny. Hudson and I, we haven't had our lunch since the last con was the last time we really spoke together, but she took me to one of my first yoga classes.
I don't remember that. Where did I take you?
Do you remember that? Yeah, it was over on near Bundy, somewhere over on the west side. It was
did
one of the
you
classes.
Power yoga? Maybe power yoga on Santa Monica?
Yeah, well, it wasn't power when I did it. No, it wasn't
like
on Santa Monica.
You?
Was it San Vicente? Off of San Vicente? It was
Yes.
Yeah.
Yoga. Yes.
Yes. I everybody was doing downward dog. I was doing flopping fish.
But you probably did it so beautifully.
I did. I had that flop very well done. So I just popped into my head. I forgot about that.
Well, that is
so funny. I saw the picture that I put, the same picture that you put up on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I love that picture, Steve. That's a great picture.
Yeah. We were hiking up above the Brand Library.
I remember.
Yeah.
I remember, and that was like the flat spot, and there was a couple there, and we asked them to take a picture.
That's right. And
it's
in fact,
you like that?
Why didn't you like that shot?
What's that?
Me?
What? No, Steve.
Oh.
Why did I? I'm sorry. What was the question?
Why didn't you like it? You said it wasn't a great shot.
Oh no! The photographically was what I was referring to. You know, because photography is my hobby, so we weren't perfectly lit with a proper gel, and you know, my makeup was a mess. Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting you said earlier about you climbing up the road, you know, path not taken. Another photo I have is, if you remember, we kind of went switchbacks to get up to that point. You hike up one area, then you hike up, you know, a path.
Yep.
We got almost to that area when you said, "I don't want to go up that part of the path. Let's go up the hill." I actually have a photo of you climbing above me up the side of the hill to get to that flat spot.
Oh. Huh.
It's not a flattering photo, I admit, because I'm down below you. But, but it's like, well, that was in your nature. So you were like, "I'm tired of the same old, so I'm just going to go this way."
Yes, it doesn't seem to have changed much.
Oh, God.
That's funny.
I have a question for you. You guys have been to a lot of conventions. For both of you, what was the most touching moment on stage? Do you have one that really it touched your heart when you heard a fan talking to you about something?
Would you like to go first, Steve?
No, you go first.
Okay.
And it's not a challenge. It's just because I've seen so many touching moments happen when Hudson was on stage. So I want to hear that.
That's true.
Wow. I don't have one, actually. There isn't one particular thing I have. But something that does come up to me that happened, I think, in the last 2 years is a really lovely woman named Rose was getting married, and she bid on the dress, which people do every year for charity, so she could wear it for her wedding.
Mm.
And that blew me away that someone would want to wear. She didn't even know what I was going to wear. I remember her contacting me beforehand and said, I hope your dress is beautiful because that's what I'm wearing for my wedding. And I was like, boy, I hope it's pretty too. Like, I don't know if we have days. I'll try not to wear something bloody.
And I know who you're talking about, and she's a very, very
right,
sweet woman.
Right, and she's so lovely. What a lovely human being. So that's like one, it's just amazing, the generosity of people and not knowing how we all affect each other's lives. Like, the writing of Xena, Steve, was so beautiful and was so, to me, so deeply spiritual, which I've talked about before. That is the bond to me. Like, it's heart-centered, and you don't have to, the name I give it is spirituality. Easier to understand for other people to say it's heart-centered. It is, and that's what I think attracts people to that show. And when they're already heart-centered and they connect to each other, it doesn't seem to be petty or small-minded people that come. It's like really loving and all-inclusive. And so people make lifelong friends when they come to the conventions. Mm-hmm. And I've heard people say it. They don't come to see the actors anymore. I mean, that may be interesting, but they come to like hang out together and to have like a really great party and interact with each other.
That's true.
Yeah.
I already have things set to meet my friends in several different days and times over the convention. I mean, it's not just what's going on in stage. I've been friends with some people since the beginning, like one girl for 13 years.
Well, several people have met their partners by the Xena convention.
That's very true. A lot of them.
Yeah, I always, when I run into people, especially online, that they say, this is my first Xena convention, what do I do? What do I expect? And they're very worried about being, you know, standing over in the corner and not participating and not being involved. I have one friend from Italy, Simona, hello. I know you're listening. She's going to be coming in, and it's her first convention. And I said to her, do not worry about this. The moment people understand this is your first convention, you are going to be just completely enveloped in warmth. They're going to grab a hold of you, and you're going to participate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
and
a
it
very
happens.
Warm.
It's a loving environment, and it's a fun environment. You know, when I get up on stage, you'll see me take a photo of the crowd, and everybody thinks I'm doing it as a joke. I'm actually taking a photo because I'm honored that people have actually shown up. They want to sit there and, like, listen to something that I say. It's true. That's something that touches me, by the way. That's one of my touching personal things, is that these people actually are interested, and there's an appreciation for something that I do because I love it. I never became a writer because it was a job. Anybody who knows my history, I did it because I loved doing it. I was having fun doing it, and then suddenly people started to love what I was doing. So back on the thing about, you know, what touches you, I don't know if I've had anything on stage where somebody has said something to me that stands out uniquely, except when somebody talks about charity. That always gets to me. But I do remember one woman taking me aside and talking about how the show had completely changed her life and had allowed her to get out of a difficult situation that she was in. And she kept saying that the show gave me strength. And I kept saying, no, the strength was there. The strength was there. I'm so glad we were part of that to at least shine some light on it. But she had found her partner at the Xena convention, and now they're together. And she began to cry, and I began to cheer up, and my Y chromosome said, don't do that, you're a man, you can't cry, you can't cry. But that has always stayed with me, that something I did, at least I was able to collaborate in, had that effect on somebody.
I have a story to tell you both.
Okay.
My dad was very, very sick. And I went to the convention. I actually asked him. I said, I've already paid. Do you want me to go or do you want me to not? I mean, it's up to you. I'm not going to make the decision. He goes, honey, go. And so I went to the convention. I had a really good time. I called every day to find out how he was doing. It wasn't like I deserted him or anything. When I came home from the convention, I told him he wanted to know everything. I was wearing the T-shirt. I was telling him about the whole thing, and he was, like, lapping it up. He loved that I was having a great time. He gave me a kiss and a hug, and he said, honey, that's all I wanted for you. And I got to tell you, the next day my dad passed away.
Mm.
So the next year I did something which was completely out of character for me. I mean, you've seen me, Steve. I'm public on the radio and all this other stuff, but when I'm at the convention, I'm quiet. I do not ask questions. I don't do any of that. I was a little, I don't know what, I was out of it that year. And Lucy and Renee were on stage. And I stood up and I told them about what happened. And they were just like, oh, my gosh, and they sent me such love. Even though it was just a couple sentences, they just said, you know, we're really sorry for what happened for your dad and stuff. But I can't tell you, it gave me strength because I was still grieving. So that's what it means to me. It's just a loving embrace, big mush. So that's my little story. Sorry to...
No, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
It is. I think that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know why I went off on that one.
No, that's perfectly in line. It's absolutely, it's a Xena story, and that's a wonderful story.
Thank you.
Yeah, because people are that accepted there with everything, with everything that's going on.
It's a loving environment, and recommend it highly for anybody who just loves the show and wants to go for fun and to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And see lots of leather.
What?
And see lots of leather.
Oh, leather.
Leather.
Or pleather. Yeah.
That's something that's amusing. I mean, some people who look great as Aries and some people who really shouldn't dress as Aries.
Well, I will not be dressing as Aries ever. So, there.
I will. That's the spring this year on stage.
You're going through that phase again.
Again. I grew all my chest hair out, so get ready.
I know a lot of fans who would actually find that interesting.
Oh, yeah. People are writing it down right now.
Yes.
No,
I don't think that's going to happen. My next question is something that has been boiling up for a while. I'm sure you've seen the groups. They have been talking about the Xena movie. And so I have a couple questions about it. Steve, would you like to see the Xena movie made? And if it was, what direction would you like it to go?
Is that for me?
Just creatively.
Oh. Wow. Well, the first part is, I think, obviously, anybody associated with the show or a fan of the show wants to see a movie made, but there's always a qualification when you say that, because eventually a Xena movie will be made. And it may be made completely different from the way Xena fans want it to be or that I might want it to be. You know, Hollywood is a machine that caters to a particular monster, and that is money. Art fits within that, unfortunately. That's what's going to be serviced. So the big concern is, can a movie be made the way that we would all think of it, think of a Xena movie, as opposed to, oh, that's a movie with the word Xena in the title, which is how a lot of them happen. in general, if I was in charge of making a movie, the first thing that would be at the top of my list as far as things to keep in mind for everybody involved, and I would make T-shirts out of it and hand it to everybody, is to say relationship is the key.
Mm-hmm.
And not just between Xena and Gabrielle. Obviously, that's the core relationship of anything that we have to do after that. But relationship, truth to character, all of those things come under that particular heading. Nobody would really even care about anything that happens in an episode of Xena or a movie of Xena if we didn't feel that we had a connection to those characters.
Yeah.
As far as what the plot would be, you know, sit down with me for an hour, I will come up with 70 different plots because the plots are really just to enhance that. I mean, I think we've all seen movies that are either remakes or sequels or whatever, and you realize that even though you liked the initial movie or initial incarnation, somebody said, wow, we could make more money if we had a bigger car or if we had a bigger monster or if we had a bigger da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It just doesn't work. So yeah. My big concern is that when a movie is made, Xena will merely be the brand and not the actual core of what the movie is.
Yeah, that is a concern. Hudson, would you like to see Callisto in it if there is a movie?
See her in it.
You know, either yourself, well, you've retired, but someone else playing Callisto or just the character in any way.
If it suits the story, yeah. I love that character. It's such a fantastic character. There's not enough rocks to fall on her head. I'm sure there's enough rocks on her head.
That's true.
Yeah, sure, why not? But it doesn't have to be, it wouldn't have to be Callisto. I mean, I think they come up with such really lovely, delicious bad guys. Just someone that you would really love to hate. You know, like Joffrey from Game of Thrones, like someone who just, to me, that makes, to have a really, really good bad guy and multi-layered, not just someone coming out saying, I'm going to get you, but someone that you can get really emotionally repelled by and at the same time attached to, and that you believe that there is a danger for the heroes. Makes it so delightful to watch. I really appreciate bad guys when I see good bad guys. So
I think that one of the interesting things about the bad guys in Xena was the multi-layers, because you felt sorry for Callisto. You felt Ares' charm. I mean, the actors were able to show so many different layers, and you don't see that, and usually they're comic strip bad guys and a lot of stuff, so that's one of the things that attracted me to Xena, is the multi-layers, not just for the good guys, but for the bad guys, too.
Well, the interesting thing is that all, hopefully, I fall into this category, but all good writers and producers and actors and directors, they all understand that villains are not villains. Every villain has a rationale. Every villain has a reason. Or at the very least, every villain has a turning point or a core moment in their life that made them who they are. Now, let's be fair here. We wrote our share of cliched bad guys. We just don't remember them because they didn't stand out to anybody. The ones that did stand out were the ones that we did give that layering to. And to a large extent, in fact, I would say 99% of the reason why, is because the ones who became memorable, we were lucky enough, and we also had an incredible casting department that brought in people who made those roles exactly what we wanted them to be and more. They gave us little treasures. They brought in layers with them, as opposed to somebody who goes on the set and plays a cliched actor. A cliched villain. I won't use names here, but we had a director who came in one time, and really good guy. And he was sitting there watching, while we were watching some tapes of one of the episodes we had done. I think it was in the second season, might have been the third. But there was a villain in there who was just, to be honest, chewing up the scenery. And this director, we hadn't worked with him before, and he was just sitting there, and we were chatting, and there was a scene there with this particular actor playing a cliched villain. And the director turned around and he said, I really want the name of that actor. And my heart kind of sunk because I was not quite happy. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah, I want to tell security to keep him off the set. Now, it's a cruel story, but unfortunately it was true. That happens. We were very fortunate in that we got a lot of really quality actors and actresses in there to play those villains deliciously as opposed to stereotypically.
Yeah, it does go hand in hand. Because it is writing as well.
Yeah.
Stems from the writing. And then from there, you have the auditions, and then, I mean, it goes hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's never a chicken and egg thing. There's never really a beginning to it. You just know it when it happens. And we had it happen more time than not. I'll tell you what a real challenge is, and I thought of this like while we were doing the show, would have been to write a feature film about Callisto. Not just about Zena Gabrielle, literally about that character. Spin that off into a feature film, because that's one of the most complex characters I've ever worked with.
That really interesting.
Well, and by the way, not everybody in the office agreed on what was driving Callisto. It was very interesting. Yeah. Well, you and I, Hudson and I, have had conversations about that particular character, and we have nuanced differences in it as well. But that's all part of the fire.
Any of this.
I must be getting old. No. Well,
you're talking about it, I'm like, this is fascinating. Wow.
I remember we had a conversation one time about something that had happened in one of the episodes. Oh, it was, I'll think about it. The Luzina fans will eat it up.
The death of Callisto when Zena kills her with a knife?
Yes.
Sacrifice. Yeah.
Yes. I think that was it. Whether she was happy or surprised, or that might have been Arjun's. I think that was it. But we had a different way of looking at it, a different way of whatever the character's approach was. They didn't violate each other. It was just kind of interesting to hear that other interpretation of it. You know, it's like, for example...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I had a nice progression in my mind of where I thought the character had gone from revenge-oriented to being so consumed by hate that hate no longer even had a meaning anymore. Because if you're born in a world that has nothing but blue, then blue is not a remarkably pretty color for you anymore. It's just life. And in my mind, I always saw Callisto progressing through those particular stages. I guess the scene with the truth or consequences scene was kind of like illustrative of that, where Callisto was asked, did you feel anything when Zena confessed your sins? And Callisto's response was a little bit, bits and pieces here and there. And to me, that was like that world is already fragmenting. The hatred part of it is already becoming so much a natural part of your world that only bits and pieces of it being remarkable remain.
Mm.
It's a difficult character to work with, and how do you make that into a hero in the sense that the audience roots for that character? So
that's very interesting. It's sort of like the Wicked Witch. And I can see you. I've never thought of that before, but I do think that Callisto, the fragmented part of her, what you're saying, I love that scene too, by the way, but that aspect of, I wouldn't even say hatred at that point. It's a good title for it, but I think it's the destruction of your own mind when it has been so embedded with hatred for so long. And hatred doesn't go one way. It also goes completely to the self, which is what starts to get deteriorated, which is why I don't think that character remembered what was, how exactly that she felt.
Isn't that like the old saying that when you hate someone, it's like eating poison because you're actually killing yourself?
Yes. Yes, and if you do it long enough and there's that much pain, any form of hatred causes just tremendous amounts of pain, and you want to numb out. And I think that's what Callisto ended up doing.
Yeah. And unfortunately, for too much of us, it's a pleasure in the sense that we are so determined to carry with us the things that annoy us and the things that we hate. I do something that kind of surprises people every now and then. A friend of mine was with me when I did it. We got into the car, and I was trying to pull out into traffic, and somebody immediately paused and waved me in. I went in, and I said, "I got to remember this." And he said, "Well, what are you remembering?" And I said, "That person just let me in." And he goes, "Why are you remembering that?" And I said, "Because I'll always remember when they don't, and I don't like that."
Yes.
That's funny because I'm one of those people who wave people in, but they don't believe you.
It's the standing in line thing. It's like, why do I always stand in the longest line? Well, you don't. You just forget about the times that it goes your way because that's not remarkable.
Exactly.
So why do you carry the bad part?
But it is remarkable. Those parts are incredibly remarkable. It's just, it feels like, I'll only speak for myself because that's all I got. I only remember the bad parts that get me angry because it seems to be something to hold a grudge against, or it seems almost like an addiction. And to change the mind, that slight bit, which is so brilliant and so sweet, and I started doing that too. It's like gratitude lists, like finding things in your life every day that you're really grateful for, because it's limited. Our time is so limited.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be big, ginormous things. When someone does let me into traffic, especially in L.A., I always wave. Like, there is always, but besides the waving, I'm going to do that from now on, too, Steve. That's a really brilliant thing, is to remember that moment of how good that feels, instead of the people cutting me off and then being angry about that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, gratitude list is a really good thing. I started that like several years ago, but it helps you get over your anger.
Mm-hmm.
It also puts it in its place. I mean, that's something I think we all need to think about. There was a list every year, everybody loves doing lists. I love lists, but I hate them at the same time. But I remember there was one list about the 10 most influential people in the 20th century. And I was appalled that the top five were dictators and people who killed and maimed and hurt each other.
Oh, God.
Gandhi didn't come in until like 8 or 9. Martin Luther King was down about 13. But, of course, Hitler topped the list. I mean, if I parse it and say who affected history more, well, even then I'm like, well, I don't want to think that those are the people that affected history so much. But the darkness, the darkness is something that pulls us to it. We can go off onto this for hours and hours.
Yeah.
I find that to be fascinating, that we roll around and revel in the pain, and we take for granted the pleasure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's so true. I have a fan question that actually goes along with this. Her name is Robin, and she wants to ask Hudson, did she have any influence in the development of Callisto? And did you like how she found closure and self in the end? Because it's sort of related to what we're talking about.
I didn't. Thank you for your question, Robin. I didn't write Callisto, but they were generous enough to allow me that if the words didn't roll off my tongue after a while, like after a couple episodes, I was able to change the words in ways that I thought would suit Callisto better. And she became mine because, of course, it's my being and I'm using everything that I have to play that particular character. So it's definitely a co-creation. And they did give me a great deal of wiggle room. There was times I begged for more blood, and they would say, that's too much blood. You can't do that much. And I want it everywhere. I want it all over my hands and face. And they were like, because I really did not want to make her pretty. Like, to me, it was really important that she was not your typical, like, when they wanted to blow dry my hair when I first came, I was like, nope. I go, knot it up. So...
What did you call the hair?
I'm sorry?
You call the hair something. In interviews and on stage, you called your hair something when you, the Callisto hair. I forgot what you called it.
Oh, I don't know. Good God.
Do you remember?
I don't know what I ate for breakfast. I have no idea. I got my hair back. And then the other question, what was the other question she asked?
Oh, she wanted to know how you liked how the character found closure and self in the end.
You know, I loved it. I don't love how I played it, and I would have done it very differently. But I believe in redemption. I believe in redemption for every human being. I think we're all capable of doing really horrific things in our lives, being human, and we're no different from each other and doing really brilliant, beautiful things. And it's just what we choose to focus on, like what Steve just talked about with having the awareness of the positive things, no matter how small they are, to bring more of that in. So I really loved that someone so dark could kind of wash her darkness away and reveal her soul to be clean, which my belief is all of our beings are clean. It's we come in with maybe karma from past life, and then we create more karma here. I don't know how all of it works. I just know that I believe in my heart that we're all completely connected, and at some point we are all really, really good beings. Even if like a mass murderer does not get that in this life, I believe in past lives. So I believe in next lives. I believe we keep getting more chances to become closer and closer to a form of enlightenment. I don't want to go off on a tangent about that, but yeah, I love it.
Well, we're going to ask you about that in a little bit anyway.
By the way,
quick
interjection on how talking about the goodness of people. Somebody just sent me a note here saying that, in fact, Zenites have raised over $12 million.
Oh, okay. That must have been an old thing I found.
That's four times as awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That should be something you guys should be proud of. This is for Steve. It's a fan question. Her name's Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
To know what inspires you to keep writing and working in the entertainment field.
Well, I have no marketable skills. That helps. first of all, working in the entertainment industry is not as entertaining as you think. Anybody who thinks that it's glamorous and it's wonderful and you make a whole bunch of money and then you sit back and retire, that's not quite the case. It's a job, and it's one of the most, it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. It's maddening. It's completely illogical. This business does not run according to any type of design. It's conflicting, the egos you have to deal with, including your own. It's just impossible, and yet it's the most incredible, rewarding thing that I could ever have done. But a lot of that goes to the core of who I am. I have a huge wanderlust in my life. I have to be constantly stimulated in every level of my life. That's why I've done so many different things as far as jobs are concerned. I've done everything from transporting bodies for a morgue to working in a convenience store to training porpoises. Done a whole bunch of things. When I fell into writing, and I did fall into it, it wasn't a plan, I found something that was different every time. And it was different because I could create different worlds. I could create different characters. I could see these scenarios in my head. The characters could talk. And then I was blessed with the opportunity to see these things actually come to life, to work with people who were also creative. And I kind of put it as like suddenly you and your friends are in one of those big castles that you get into, a kid's castle, you can bounce around. It's a creative bouncy room. You're just bouncing all over the place and having fun with creative ideas. I can't imagine my life without that. I would be horrified to imagine my life without that. So the business side of it, you deal with. I love working in television, to be honest. I love putting together a show because creativity from day one to the last day of actually production. As much as some people might disagree with this, I love working with almost everybody. Very few people I would say I wouldn't work with. And I've had some contentious relationships with people. I mean, the Xena staff alone, we were not always in concert. We were like a dysfunctional family. We disagreed on things. We had heated arguments on things, and then we would all go out and have lunch together. That's just the way the business is. But the creative aspect of it, I couldn't live without that. That's so much a part of me that I managed to fall into something that is basically it's my core essence. And, oh, yes, by the way, we'll pay you to do it. I mean, my gosh, it's like, is that lucky or what?
It's really lucky. I got a funny one. I actually gave this to you earlier. I just think it's funny. Kay asks, Steve, when you named the Amazon Chalapa, did you go off to Taco Bell to get the name?
There's a whole list of, one day I'll publish it. Sharon Delaney over at Creation had asked me to give her this list. We talked about it. A lot of the characters that I came up with, the characters' names, they have a genealogy. They have a history. And yes, that actually is correct. Chalapa came from Chalupa. Talmadeus came from the fact that I just bought the soundtrack to Amadeus. Mavica came from a camera I had bought, which was Mavican came from a camera I bought, which was called a Mavica. A lot of the character names that I created came out of something around me. I look for something I can Greekize or Latinize that kind of matches the character I want to write. And many times I'm just kind of like looking around my office. I mean, Flanagan came from somebody I went out with named Flanagan. So that's absolutely correct, yes, that name.
It's funny because every time I pass Temecula, I think of you.
And Temecula came from the city. Tildes came from that little squiggly line that's on your keyboard. Calliopus, figure it out, folks. Calliope horse, Calliopus.
Hudson, I wanted to not let the opportunity slip. I want you to tell us about your sacred movement dance class and yoga class that you're going to be doing at the convention.
Thank you. I did the sacred movement dance when I was in Paris this year, and it was so beautiful. It was so beautiful that I decided to ask Creation if I'd be able to do it again here. It's not dance like a disco dance where you're trying to be like cool or hip or sexy or impress someone. It's sacred where it's a dance, a movement with your body where you get to be genuinely yourself, no matter what that looks like. You can be like a kid. But the only thing that we ask is that you don't talk during it. So you could dance with other people. You dance by yourself. You can lie on the floor. It's not normal in any way. It's but it is a gift to be able to watch people be genuine with themselves and to connect to other people. It's a tremendous amount of fun. And I hope people give it a go and try it because everybody's welcome. You just wear something comfortable. And I believe there's a Creation's having a dance right after that as well that's more like the disco kind of dance, which will be fun too. I'm going to stop by to see that. I'm sure I'll be warm and happy to do that afterwards as well. And then the yoga class is going to be Friday morning. And I believe it's an hour and a half. And everybody's welcome to that as well. It's all ages, all body types. And it's another way to get in your body, but also calm your nervous system down. And it's in both ways, both modalities to me are ways to really learn to love yourself more. That's the space that I hope to create. Something really, really sacred, really peaceful. The dance isn't always peaceful. It gets really tribal at times and really wild, and then it drops down into sacred again. And I think, yeah, that's the best I can do to describing it. It's a little disjointed, but there you go.
Oh, it's perfect. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about is your yoga retreats and your yoga video, and you have a book coming out for a cookbook. Can you tell a little bit about that?
God, that's so many things. Yes, so much stuff is going on. And
I don't want to leave anything out.
Thank you. We're having a yoga retreat for 4 days in Loveland, Colorado in March. And all of these things you can check out if anything interests you at hudsonlike.com. I just finished my first little cookbook. Anita gave me the idea to make it because she really likes the food that I make, and it's healthy. It's healthy, but it tastes good. And it's got things like chocolate pudding in it. I mean, how can you go wrong? But it's healthy. It's healthy. It's not like a bunch of processed sugar and dairy. There's a little bit of dairy in it, but it's basically vegan. But it's tasty. And we're just finishing up with that. And I just finished my first yoga DVD, which I have been waiting forever to do. And I did it with an incredible artist named Taryn. And she will also be at the Creation Convention. And we're talking about doing, we just haven't finalized it yet, doing a week yoga retreat right outside of Prague this summer.
Wow.
And we're in talks also. You know, I'm so excited about that. Because we did the yoga retreat last year for 4 days, but we really want to do a full week because it's much cheaper to do it in Czech Republic. So we would be able to do it for a full week. And then we're in talks also about doing a woman's dance retreat in, like, the middle of the wilderness in France. And it would just be women alone. And that also would be incredibly inexpensive for the European people that could get there easily. Of course, everybody is welcome. And that's a lot. And stay tuned because it's all going to be on the HudsonLake.com if you're interested.
Cool.
Steve. I want to know how Stalag Hex is doing, because the last time I talked to you, it was very limited release. Has it been released to the general public yet?
Not just yet. And Hudson, say hi to Anita for me.
Sure.
Yeah, she's so sweet. I love her to death.
Yes.
So Stalag Hex, yes, that's the graphic novel that won't die. That's been going on for several years. It's gone through a lot of different changes, and most of them very good. We did Stalag X is a graphic novel that I'm working on with Kevin J. Anderson. For those of you who have not heard this, which I'd be surprised because it's been going on for a while, and Kevin, of course, is one of the top sci-fi writers. So Kevin and I are working with Gestalt Publishing, and we did a teaser issue at the Denver Comic Con back in June, which was very well received. So I won't give you all the details of all the stuff that has gone on since then, but we are planning to do hard copy release, meaning you can physically hold it in your little greasy mitts. It's not just a digital download. There'll be three volumes of about 44 to 48 pages, and they'll start being released sometime in February or March. We don't have it nailed down just yet. A lot of that has to do with just the process that it's gone through. But Stalag X is a futuristic story of a concentration camp and an interstellar war, and one very mysterious person and how he's dealing with what is basically a very, very gritty and graphic retelling of concentration camps throughout history. It's not one for the faint of heart, to be honest. But this is kind of a project of the heart that Kevin and I have been trying to put together for quite a while. We have an amazing artist, Mike Ratera, and Dave Dorman did the cover art for our first issue. So we're actually very happy with it, and we hope that's going to be coming out very soon. I can't go into details as far as the other interest that it has gotten, but we do have a lot of interest as far as it going for a feature film or television series.
Cool.
And that's more than just the casual, oh, I'm going to take it out there. We do have solid interest, and we're already getting feedback on some of the network venues. And I wish I could tell you more, but until solid contracts are signed, I'm just reluctant to do that. So at the moment, all I can tell you is we definitely have the graphic novel going. So that's going along pretty well. And then the other project that I'm doing right now, I'm co-writing a novel called Vil Annie, with Peter Wax.
Question.
Yeah. Peter Wax is an author that I met at the Denver Comic Con. We hit it off. And Vil Annie is set slightly in the future, and it is the story of a very unique young lady who is dealing with a lot of demons inside of herself. She has a tremendous amount of anger and hatred for her place in life and who she is, and she doesn't understand how much that controls her. I mean, literally, the darkness takes her over. But the world that she exists in is a world that half the world are people who have superhero powers, And unlike you have seen on, you know, TV shows and movies of that ilk so far, these superheroes are almost all sponsored, because it's like being in the middle of a wrestling organization. Every character is sponsored. They fight, and they're predetermined winners and losers. And she basically uncovers a conspiracy within that, but she realizes by the fact that she doesn't play by their rules and that she's driven completely by this anger inside of her, she has an advantage. But that's the top spin of the novel. The truth of it is that the entire novel is about one person's realization about herself and trying to overcome herself in order to find herself.
That is a good idea. I mean, that is like what every person is trying to do. So that's beautiful.
It's been fun so far, yeah. And I have no publication date on that. We have a publisher, but there's no date on it just yet. I'm actually going through the second draft right now, doing some polish work and edition stuff, and it'll go back and forth a couple of times before it's finally released. But it's been fun. It's a new world for me.
Have you already gotten a cover and stuff for it, or have you gotten to that point?
We have some artwork, but we are working on some other artwork. We're also going to possibly do some ancillary platforms, maybe a couple of webisodes, maybe some teasers done on it. We're kind of designing it that way. That's the new industry. Everything is ancillary platforms, internet, webisodes, TV, film, it's multi-pronged, so you have to kind of keep that in mind. But as soon as I have that kind of artwork, that'll be going up and people will be able to see that.
I have some more fan questions. Mm-hmm. This one is for Hudson. It's from Sarah. She wants to know, when you were working on the two series, which one do you prefer, Xena or Hercules?
Xena.
Xena.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell her why?
it's just far more interesting. I think we talked about this before. I think I even talked about it on this interview, or an interview with you, Sherry. I found Hercules to be much more of a boys' club, and Xena to be really empowering for women. And so energetically, I had fun playing with Kevin because I was such a freak. I think he had no idea what to do with me. So that was just definitely enjoyable. I think that my chemistry with Lucy was very electric, and it was continuously fun to bounce off of her. And I felt supported being a woman on Xena more than I did on Hercules.
Okay. Steve, I have a question for you from Deborah. She wants to know what the spark, the creative spark that lit your fire when you were writing Xena.
Oh. The creative spark that would be more general. It's whenever I write anything, what's my creative spark? That's a very good question, because there's not a simple answer to it. There's no well-defined line. It's the way these things are created, the way these series and characters are created is we as writers come up with a basic voice that we want to hear in our head. And there are so many different ways that voice is formed. It can be because of a situation that we think, I'd love to see what's the best character to put in this situation, or it can come up with, I love this character, what's the best situation to surround the character with. And then it becomes a growth process. And sometimes you're not really participating in that. I know it's really hard to explain. Writers understand what I'm saying. All of you out there who have tried, even if you've just tried fan fiction, you understand this. It starts to take on a little bit of a life of its own. And the spark happens somewhere in there. There's a moment where that voice is realized in your head, and it starts talking to you. And it's not talking down to you. It's not talking around you. It's suddenly this enjoyable little bubble that you're in with this character. And from that point on, you just want to start writing the character. And when you actually do it for production, if you're actually working on a TV show or a film, when you have the actress and actors involved, then it goes back and forth because now they bring their essence into it and you have to accommodate that. You love working with the little joys that they bring you and you hope you do it justice, and if you send it back to them and they suddenly find joy in what you're doing with your character, then it becomes what I call the upward spiral. Everybody is like, we can't wait to see what each other does, and it starts moving up the scale until it becomes much better and much better. Somewhere in there is the spark, but the only thing I can tell you is that you're driven to do it because you just love doing it. You know, the hardest thing for me when I write is actually starting to type the first line. Because up until that point, I'm trying to do everything not to. Because to me, it's like, oh, this is work, this is work, this is work. Once I write that first line, it's just like, boom, I'm here, okay, let's have fun. And I just go crazy.
I do understand that. I think that's a really great explanation. I have one last one. I'm sorry? Hudson,
nothing.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I heard a noise. I do apologize.
Yeah, there's been a couple of tweets on the line.
Yeah, I heard that too. Agnes was the fan who has this question. She wants to know what the training went in for your swords fighting and your physical fighting, and she wanted to know if you enjoyed it.
Oh, I loved it. Thank you, Agnes. It's a great question. In fact, the man who taught me how to use swords became one of my very best friends. I made such good friends through this show and on the show. And his wife actually played Xena double. So I used to fight with her. So she would play Xena anytime the camera was showing my face in the back of Xena. It was actually a double, like a fighting double, and Ava did that as well. So I think that when I first got the job, before I even went to New Zealand, they gave me 3 days of a form of karate, which I don't remember really learning much from, being really willing, but not learning that much from. And then it was mostly Peter Bell at the time was the stunt coordinator. He would take me aside, and it was like a dance. They would teach me this particular dance. They usually teach me with the other stunt double, because they don't want to damage either one of the actresses. So really rarely did Lucy and I ever fight, like, directly. It was usually, even with me, it wouldn't be with me, it would be with my stunt double. But I learned as I went along, and really it was one of my favorite things to do, because it was a dance. It was fun to move around and jump around. So,
that's
yeah.
Cool. That is really cool. Sadly, we've come to the end of the interview. It's a fast hour.
Wow.
I want to thank you both. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I'm sure the fans have loved it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank
you. Yeah, this was
thank
fun.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. And Hudson,
so
I'm going to see you at the con. And we'll.
I'm sorry?
I said I'm going to see you at the con, and we're going to.
You are.
We're going to establish a lunch date.
Come dance, Steve.
You seen me dance.
Come dance. I'm going to try to see you dance.
That we, I'd like
to
see.
Anything.
Well, I'll
see
you both there.
Okay, I hope everybody comes.
Yeah.
And thank you for the time. Thank you for this time, Sherry. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Sherry, very much.
Oh, you're both very welcome. It's been really fun for me, and I've really enjoyed it. All the information for both of you will be on my website and on my blog. Thank you. Thank you again.
Okay, see you soon.
Take care.
You too. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.